Vekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really interesting and maybe controversial book, Robert Greene's The 48 Laws of Power.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those books that people have strong feelings about. It's less a comforting read and more, a stark look at reality.
That's a good way to put it. Stark. The core idea Greene puts forward is that power, getting it, keeping it, is just fundamental to how humans interact. Always has been.
Right. And it's amoral, you know?
Yeah.
It just is. Happening all the time. Whether you want to play the game or not, the rules still affect you.
And that really gets to the mission of this deep dive, and maybe the book's mission, too. Greene basically argues that being naive is, frankly, dangerous.
Totally. Believing that just working hard and being nice is enough, well, it leaves you vulnerable, especially when things get competitive.
So the book isn't trying to tell you what's right or wrong?
Not at all. It's offering a kind of strategic literacy.
Yeah.
Giving you the tools to see these power plays happening around you.
So you can defend yourself. Or maybe use them.
Or potentially use them, yes. It's about understanding the dynamics first and foremost.
Yeah.
Recognizing the game board, you could say.
Okay, strategic literacy. I like that. We're not just listing rules here. We want to get into why they work, you know, historically and even now.
Exactly. Seeing the social chessboard. But maybe first we should talk about the author.
Good idea. Robert Greene. He's not like a CEO or a politician writing this. So where does his insight come from?
Well, his authority is really in his method. He studied classics, history, philosophy. That's his background.
Ah, okay. Academic.
Sort of. But he's more like a synthesizer.
Yeah.
He spent years digging through like 3,000 years of history, looking for patterns in how people gained and lost power, you know, from ancient courts to modern times.
And didn't he have a bunch of different jobs, too? I remember reading that.
Yes. And that's key, I think. He wasn't just in an ivory tower. He worked construction. He was a translator, even a screenwriter in Hollywood.
Hollywood. Wow. Talk about a power environment.
Right. So he saw these dynamics play out firsthand in all sorts of settings, from the bottom to, well, closer to the top.
So that gives him a pretty unique perspective. He's connecting these grand historical events to, like, everyday struggles for influence.
Exactly. He boils down all this complex history and human behavior into these actionable laws. Practical, maybe even cynical, but based on observed patterns.
A kind of map of human ambition based on what's worked and what hasn't.
A codex, yeah. A controversial one for sure.
Okay, so let's get into the book itself, The 48 Laws of Power. You called it a codex, a game manual. What's the basic idea, the structure?
The main premise is simple, if a bit stark. Power is a game, and it has rules. The book is meant to be a practical guide for navigating social hierarchies work. Politics, social life, you name it.
It's less about being morally right and more about being effective, strategically speaking.
Precisely. And the structure makes it quite accessible, despite the heavy historical detail. There were 48 laws, right?
Right, 48.
And for each one, he gives you context. There's the law itself, then a story about someone who broke it, the transgression.
Usually ending badly for them.
Oh, yeah, spectacularly badly sometimes. Then an observance. Someone who followed the law and succeeded. And finally, his analysis, the keys to power.
So it turns history into strategy lessons.
Exactly. It really focuses on things like deception, managing your reputation, timing, controlling your emotions.
Yeah.
Stuff that makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah, it forces you to kind of suspend judgment, doesn't it? Just to understand why these tactics, even the dark ones, have actually worked for people throughout history.
You have to detach a bit.
Yeah.
Look at it pragmatically. Was it effective? Yes or no? It's a cold look at human nature.
Okay, let's dive into some of the laws themselves. This is the core of it. How about law one? Never outshine the master. That one sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? Like, don't be too good.
It does sound that way, but it taps into something fundamental about hierarchy and ego. The law is basically saying, don't make your boss feel insecure.
Ah, the ego.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you show off your talents too much, too obviously, you risk making them feel threatened, overshadowed. And power, well, power doesn't like feeling overshadowed.
So you have to make them look good, even if you're doing the work.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Make the master appear more brilliant. Greene uses the example of Nicolas Fouquet, Louis XIV's finance minister.
Oh, the party guy.
That's the one. He threw this incredibly lavish party trying to impress the king, but it was too impressive. Louis XIV felt upstaged.
And what happened?
Fouquet was arrested very soon after.
Yeah.
Spent the rest of his life locked up. His competence was real, but he failed the appearance test badly.
Wow. So manage the optics, make the boss shine.
Huh.
Okay. What about law four? Always say less than necessary. The power of silence.
Right. This one's about using silence or just brevity as a tool. The more you talk, the more likely you are to say something dumb. Huh. Well, we all are sometimes. Or reveal too much or just seem ordinary. Saying less makes you seem more powerful, more in control, maybe even a little intimidating.
People get nervous when you're quiet, right? They start talking to fill the space.
Exactly. And often they reveal their thoughts or weaknesses. Silence makes them work harder.
That takes patience, though, doesn't it? Especially if everyone else is talking constantly.
It requires strategic patience. That's a running theme. The control and mystique you gain from saying less often outweigh any short-term benefit of chiming in.
Hmm. Okay, let's switch gears to a really tough one. Law two. Never put too much trust in friends. Learn how to use enemies. That sounds incredibly cynical.
It is cynical, no doubt about it. But Green's point is about the danger of emotion in power plays.
Ooh.
Friends. Well, friendships are messy.
How so?
There's envy, unspoken expectations, resentment if you get ahead. Betrayal from a friend can cut deeper and come from unexpected angles.
But enemies, how can you use them?
The former enemy who comes over to your side often has more to prove. They want to show their new loyalty, rebuild their reputation. So paradoxically, they might be more reliable because the relationship is clearer, more transactional.
Transactional.
Yeah.
That sounds exhausting. Basing relationships on utility.
It does. But remember, Green is analyzing what worked historically in high-stakes power games. Calculated moves often beat emotional ties in those contexts.
Okay, focusing on effectiveness, not feelings. Got it.
Huh.
What about law five? So,
much reputation, no. Guard it with your life.
Ah, reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Green sees it as the absolute cornerstone of power. If people believe you're powerful or smart or ruthless, you often win before any real conflict starts.
And in today's world, with the internet, guarding it with your life seems almost impossible, but also more crucial than ever.
It's incredibly difficult. One slip up goes viral. The stakes are higher. Reputation management is constant.
So how do you even do that? How do you protect it? Green suggests building it on solid ground, real skills, discipline, things that are hard to fake or tear down easily, and being constantly aware of how you're perceived.
Constant vigilance. Okay, moving to how we handle conflict. Law nine. Win through your actions, never through argument. I know I argue too much sometimes.
Most of us do. But Green argues that winning an argument is often a hollow victory. You might be right, but you create resentment in the person you defeated.
Yeah, nobody likes being proven wrong forcefully.
Exactly. That resentment sticks. Actions, on the other hand, achieving something tangible, showing results, are much more persuasive in the long run. Show, don't just tell.
It makes sense. Actions speak louder than words. Okay, let's jump to the end, Law 48. Assume formlessness. This sounds advanced.
It's definitely presented as the most sophisticated law. The idea is that any fixed shape, any predictable strategy or identity is a vulnerability.
Because people can figure you out and counter you.
Precisely. The most powerful are adaptable, fluid, unpredictable. Like water, as the saying goes. If you're formless, how can anyone effectively attack you or even grasp what you're doing?
So you keep changing, adapting, never letting anyone define you.
That's the core of it. Planned inconsistency, almost. If they can't predict your next move, they can't strategize against you effectively.
That sounds like a lot of mental energy. Okay, let's pull back a bit. What are the big overarching themes here? We've touched on a few. One seems to be appearance versus reality.
Oh, absolutely central. The idea that perception is reality in the social world. You see it in Law 6, court attention at all costs, or Law 30, make your accomplishment seem effortless.
Right. It's not enough to be good. You have to look good doing it. Effortlessly good.
Which, ironically, takes a huge amount of hidden effort. Managing that image is paramount.
And the biggest threat to that image often comes from within, right?
Yeah.
Which brings us to another theme, the dangers of emotion.
Yes. Emotion is painted as the enemy of power. Why? Because it clouds your judgment, makes you reactive, predictable.
Anger, fear, love, they make you vulnerable.
Exactly. A rival can use your emotions to manipulate you. Think about Law 39. Stir up waters to catch fish.
Ah, provoking your opponent.
Right. If you can stay calm while making them emotional, you gain a massive advantage. You stay clear-headed, they make mistakes. Rationality over passion is key.
Maintain your center while they lose theirs. Okay. And the last big theme, the one that really bothers people, is this. Amoral pragmatism.
Yeah, the book just doesn't deal in good versus evil. It looks at actions purely in terms of, was it effective? Did it achieve the goal? Yes or no?
So the reader has to kind of put their own morality aside just to understand the analysis?
Temporarily, yes. To understand the mechanics of why certain strategies worked throughout history, it's not saying you should use them, but that you need to understand them, because others might, or because history shows they are part of the human toolkit.
It's showing you the world as it often is, maybe not as you wish it was, full of self-interest and ambition.
Exactly that. Okay, maybe we should touch on some specific quotes. The book has some really sharp, memorable lines.
Yeah, the language itself is quite strategic. What's one that stands out?
How about this one, reflecting that appearance theme? Everything is judged by its appearance. What is unseen counts for nothing.
Ouch. Brutal. So if you do great work, but nobody sees it or knows about it, strategically, it's worthless.
Pretty much, according to Green. If it doesn't build your reputation or visibility, it doesn't move the power needle.
Okay, here's another one about the downside of putting yourself out there. When you show yourself to the world and display your talents, you naturally stir all kinds of resentment, envy, and other manifestations of insecurity.
Yes. The price of success, basically. You can't achieve anything significant without attracting envy. So the implication is you need resilience. You can't let the petty jealousies of others derail you.
You just have to accept envy as part of the territory if you're ambitious.
Right. And maybe one more about strategy. Power is not revealed by striking hard or often, but by striking true.
Precision over brute force.
Exactly. It emphasizes smart timing, careful targeting. One well-aimed, decisive move is better than flailing around aggressively. It's about focus.
Okay, these are powerful ideas. But how do we actually use them? Or maybe defend against them? Let's talk real-life applications, maybe in the workplace.
Sure. Take law 4. Always say less than necessary. Think about a salary negotiation.
Okay.
Instead of nervously talking and justifying, state your desired number clearly, and then just be quiet.
Use the silence.
Use the silence. It puts pressure on the other person. They often feel compelled to talk, maybe reveal their upper limit, or even offer more just to break that uncomfortable quiet. It's using silence as leverage.
That's subtle, but potentially very effective. Okay, what about defense? How do we spot these laws being used on us?
Be wary of Law 12. Use selective honesty and generosity to disarm. If a colleague suddenly starts being overly nice, sharing secrets, doing you favors out of the blue.
Red flag.
Could be. It's often a way to lower your defenses, make you feel obligated or trusting right before they make a big ask or a manipulative move. That sudden generosity isn't always genuine. It can be a strategic setup.
So recognize the pattern. Don't fall for the surface kindness if it feels off. What about a personal application? Something we can use for ourselves, maybe more constructively.
Well, there's Law 18. Do not build fortresses to protect yourself. Isolation is dangerous.
Don't withdraw when things get tough.
Exactly. The instinct might be to pull back, hide away when you're facing problems. But Green warns that cuts you off from information, from potential allies, from understanding the situation. Staying connected, even when it's hard, is strategically smarter.
Gather intel, find support, don't let isolation make you weaker. That actually sounds like pretty solid advice.
It is. Not all the laws are about ruthless manipulation. Some are about smart self-preservation and awareness.
This book, it's definitely a heavy read. It forces you to look at things differently. You might not like the picture it paints, but it's hard to ignore the historical patterns it points out.
I think the biggest takeaway really is that power dynamics are a skill, something you can study, practice, and get better at understanding, even if only for defense. The book gives you analytical tools.
It makes you a more astute observer of people, maybe?
Definitely. You start seeing the underlying currents in situations. And for me, the most lasting things, that shift in perspective you mentioned.
How so?
It pushes you to operate based on how the world seems to work, with all its complexities and ambitions, rather than just how you wish it worked. It's an education in navigating reality.
An essential education, perhaps, for anyone trying to make their way in complex social or professional worlds. It leaves you thinking, doesn't it?
It really does. What's the real cost of being too predictable? And what advantage lies in being, well, adaptable, formless?
Lots to mull over. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.